listening to Fox Sports Radio. Radio. This is Straight Out of Vegas. With the voice of Vegas, your host, RJ Bell. The pregame show America has always wanted. I doubt the future. I doubt the future. From the Vegas Strip, here's RJ Bell.
You heard it. I'm RJ live, coast to coast, 6 o'clock Eastern, 3 o'clock here in Vegas. Action-packed Wednesday. Don't let that Monday throw you off Wednesday. Because we've all made that mistake, I'm sure. We're going to be talking again because it's almost like a tennis match. Magic return serve. Last night, we'll be talking about the aftermath of his response with the Laker chaos. And also, we're going to glean some of the nuggets from that article that we didn't get to. Because I think there was some educational stuff when it comes to running a franchise or what really the NBA, you know, behind the office doors, what really goes on. In studio, Steve Fezzik, Brad Powers, the pros who know. They're excelling today. I mean, in show prep, they were killing it. At the end, they're going to say, man, maybe Fezzik and Brad's name should be up in the lights. And I'm like, check your contract. Also, though, in L.A., and you can't have pros without Joes. He's Jonas Knox.
Always good to be here, RJ, on a Wednesday at Straight Out of Vegas. And we start with more drama as we wait for the start of the NBA Finals. There is a Donnybrook that has broken out. It's Magic versus the LA Lakers. Everybody blaming everybody. We had the mess of the report from Baxter Holmes yesterday that we discussed. And now Magic Johnson was on ESPN earlier defending himself against the report.
I'm a guy that will tell you the truth. Now, a lot of Laker employees didn't like that I held them accountable. That's what my job was. Did I have to fire some people? Yes, because we had to bring about change and get better.
So, RJ, what does Vegas make of the situation involving Magic and the Lakers?
Well, I got to tell you, if you listen to the guys that really understand Belichick, what they say is, and I think it applies here with Magic, don't think about what the person can't do. Think about what he can do. And that's something in business I had to learn is you want everyone to be, you know, globally good at everything, right? And it's just that's just fantasy world. So the idea that you couldn't take Magic, who loves the Lakers, even after all of this, you know, hashtag, you know, Lakers support, whatever he's using, multiple ones oftentimes. So to me, making it where he said in that original Stephen A. interview that he had final say, that was the mistake. Now, maybe Magic wouldn't have taken it without that. But in a weird way, if you ask the following question, listen, Magic, let's assume even though you have never done this job, let's assume because you're Magic Johnson, which I love that line, it's like, hey, why? Because I'm Magic. His confidence got him a long way. But even if you said, you've never had this job, but you're going to be as good as anyone else, that's a stretch, right? But then you add in, and oh, by the way, you're going to work, what, half as much? Because at no point was anyone saying Magic was putting 50, 60 hours a week in with the Lakers, right? What he said in the interview, and I'm, again, if he got the agreement on this, kudos, right? It was a heck of a negotiation for Magic. But if you've never done the job and you're working a fraction of the hours, I don't care if you're Magic or not, you're not going to be the final decision maker. But boy, if you're Magic and you have the scope of this area, that area, and obviously the ambassador, obviously the guy that goes on TV, has the press conferences. And then maybe, you know, again, it sounds like it would have to be a five-person panel that Magic would have been on in this hypothetical, in which everyone had a vote and Genie was a tiebreaker. Like something like that, it feels like could have worked. Now, maybe Magic wouldn't have taken it, but it is kind of absurd. But maybe that's how Magic got here, is he looked at the absurd and said, no problem. But, I mean, Jonas, think about it. If you say you've never done the job, and it's really unrelated to anything you've ever done, and then you think about, I mean, was he putting in, I mean, what was your guess? I mean, you hear the whispers. I'm guessing average 25, 28 hours a week in the office, right?
That's what it sounds like. He wasn't there a whole lot.
Which is less than half for this, you know, in this kind of job. So how could he be the final decision maker?
Yeah,
right?
And I think any job you take, I remember when I first got into radio, I wanted to learn how to edit sound, and I stayed extra time early on. Like your early stages of any business or career, my brother owns a restaurant, the early days were always the hardest because you've got to figure stuff out, and he was still in sort of the embryonic state of taking over and trying to turn around that team, and he was just kind of, you know, half-assing it, for lack of a better term,
except
a lot of times.
That is a fair assessment if he's supposed to be the typical decision maker in basketball. I agree. But if he is an ambassador, if he, you know, like Jerry West was with Golden State, right? He wasn't making the final decisions, but he had a vote. Boy, wouldn't Magic have benefited from that? Or wouldn't the Lakers have benefited from Magic doing it? And now there wouldn't be in theory, there wouldn't have been the battles. So I think there's a lot of, in hindsight, it seems like, and again, the article with all the drama, and you're dealing with people that usually get their way. You know, that's what's always interesting, is when there's one town and Arthur Fonzarelli always wins the fights in Milwaukee, let's say. And then there's a guy in Chicago and he always wins the fights. So now there's two guys that's never lost a fight and they're somehow fighting in some roadhouse and a highway in between. That's interesting, right? And to me, Jeannie Buss usually wins, right? Magic usually wins, no pun intended, 5 titles. So these were a play, and obviously Pelinka's, you know, Kobe's agent.
Yeah.
So these are all pedigreed guys and gals who are not used to losing, and I think they're not taking it too well, because obviously, and PR 101 is, there when there's a story you don't like, you actually accept maybe not getting your side out fully to have the story die. And as much as we might say, oh, you know, Lakers are such a big story, what has more than a 24-hour shelf life anymore? I mean, after the Super Bowl ends on Sunday, we're not talking about that thing too much on Wednesday, right? So to me, this would have died, but maybe they all like what's being said. You know, that happens sometimes in politics where it feels like both politicians, though they're disagreeing, they think they have a winning argument. I'm RJ Bell, straight out of Vegas. What I'd like to do, and Fez and Brad, jump in if you have any thoughts on this, is just take two or three items from the article that I thought I had never thought of before, and I thought it was noteworthy. Number one, and I've heard this from a couple of hardcore basketball guys, that Frank Vogel is a better coach than not only Ty Lue, but anyone that was up for that job, you know, anyone that was seriously up for that job. Does anyone strongly disagree with that?
I would disagree. I think if he was a better coach than Ty Lue, then why wasn't Ty Lue given the job?
Well, that's the question, though. How much of the decision-making on Ty Lue being at least entering into discussions, right, with the Lakers? Mm-hmm. I don't think they had a handshake agreement, or they wouldn't have had terms that were, you know, disagreed upon. But because it's not like the length of the contract is fine print, right?
Yeah.
So to me, here's my question, and I'll keep asking it, though not every day, because it'd get boring. Well, where's Ty Lue's other offer at? Like, one thing people say oftentimes is they say, man, I can't believe so-and-so, singer, sports star, TV star, is getting paid $1 million an episode. I won't make $1 million in my whole life, and I'm, you know, doing X, Y, and Z. And there wouldn't be roads if it wasn't for, all right, okay. What's the answer, right? Economics 101. It's how much is generated from that person's effort, right? So with the Lakers or any NBA team, they got to assess, okay, what is a entry-level coach? What does he cost? Or maybe, let's say, replacement level is the better way to say it. Okay, so you can get that person cheap. Now, if you have a chance to get Popovich, yeah, it's going to be a lot more money, but boy, you're probably getting a bargain, right? And then other times you see guys with bigger names, but maybe not the pedigree, get, you know, more than replacement level, but it's not worth it, right? So every team is out there making a decision about who they should have as the coach and how much they should pay him. And the marketplace right now is saying, Ty Lue, for what now, the third straight season? Am I remembering that right? Or would this be upcoming will be the second straight? He will be out of work.
He was fired early on last season.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. So he stayed on, what was it, like 10 games?
Yeah, it was really early.
Oh, they gave him
a
good shot. Okay.
Yeah.
So to me, I get that for a short period of time, the market, because just there's only so many openings, but how long would, you know, think of the top 10 coaches in the NBA, how long would they stay on the market? And now Ty Lue's saying, I don't know how rich he is. Maybe he's got enough money. He doesn't care. But what was the offer for 3 years, right?
I think he wanted a longer-term offer.
He wanted five.
Yeah, they didn't want to give him more than three.
And he said, no thanks. You know, three, no thank you. Well, who's coming with three now even? Right? So to me, what the marketplace is telling us is Ty Lue is not in demand, which makes it look like the Lakers not necessarily made the right decision, but it wasn't a catastrophe that Ty Lue left. And I guess the last thing I would say about the Lakers, RJ Bell straight out of Vegas, Jonas Knox, Steve Fezzik, Brad Powers. LeBron, the effects of LeBron, other than what we see. Now, anyone that reads sports writing, that you know, the websites, that listens to radio podcasts, they've heard, oh, you know, LeBron likes his crew with him, right? And sometimes they're on the plane, and you might have heard, oh, Pat Riley got tired of it. Okay. What I understood from this article, and it really was clear, is LeBron has three of his friends on staff. Now, think about that a second. This is almost like college football type stuff, Brad, is, you know, oh, the dad has a house, you know, how they do those shenanigans, right? Oh, we just wanted to get, you know, we wanted them to guard the stadium, you know, or whatever, is the idea that you can't pay the kid in theory, so you find an ancillary way, a roundabout way to get him the money. Well, remember, LeBron, how much is LeBron worth? Talk about market. You know, 2 or 3 years ago, when the max was around 30 mil, was LeBron worth 60? If there was no max contract and there was a bidding war for LeBron a couple years ago, how much would the bidding, where would it have stopped, you think, Jonas?
Oh, God. 60 seems about right. I wouldn't be surprised if somebody paid more.
Yeah. So in a way, you could say LeBron underpaid. He's only getting 50 cents on the dollar back even, you know, 2 years ago.
Right.
So how do you compensate for that if you're a team? One, you're in L.A., you're in Miami, or you're in his hometown, right? So you've got the other factors. And then you start feeding money to his buddies. And also with this Clutch Sports is the way that it's like, oh, give this guy, Pope a contract that no one thought was appropriate. And in a way, it's a way to pay LeBron because he owns some of the, or he's got an interest, right, is the theory. I'm not even sure if that's explicit or not in Clutch. So to me, just the idea that LeBron with all, you know, 30 plus, I mean, what's he worth, you know, moving towards $1 billion and it still makes sure this guy gets his 100. In a weird way, you think he just paid 100 and make it easier on the, not so much the money, but just why not stop the narrative that you're triple dipping like he tends to? But then someone else is going to say, finally a player is making money, you know, where Joe Louis was broke when he died. So, I mean, I see both sides of it. And very last point quickly, they said, though, that Clutch Mafia, Clutch Sports Mafia type thing keeps a lot of the free agents out because, you know, to me from the outside, it just made no sense. You know, Paul George isn't even visiting. But the theory is, even if you're the seventh, eighth best player in the NBA, you walk into the Lakers, the power structure there was so entrenched with LeBron and obviously with Magic and the others that no one was going to have a say. Like even the second, you know, the seventh, eighth best player in the NBA, and Anthony Davis even would walk in and have little to no power. And most of the elite free agents want some power, just like LeBron does. So to me, that the story and kind of shed some light on that. Any thoughts on that, Jonas?
Yeah, I just think that we're at the point to where what's the plan moving forward? Everybody's talking about what happened and this and that, and there's no discussion about what's the plan moving forward. And I don't know while they're trying to paint Magic to be a bad guy, at the same time, they're also painting the organization to be a bad situation. If I was a free agent, I got to be looking at this going, all right, what's happening here? Because every day a new story comes out. So they're in this battle with Magic, and everybody's pointing fingers, all while everybody in the background standing and looking at the diaper fire they've become and thinking, well, I don't want to have to go deal with that. I just think at some point, don't you have to move forward and think about the future?
Oh, no doubt. And what what Colin talks about, he does talk about LeBron a lot, is the idea that if – it's not obvious that something's well run. It's not well run. I mean, the very fact that we can debate, you know, who's in charge is right. is proof positive. So when we come back, we've been waiting and waiting. And to be honest, I did not want to talk about this subject. It's Vegas related, but we're forced to when we come back.
That's coming up next. He's RJ Bell. I'm Jonas Knox, and this is the pregame show you've always wanted right here on Fox Sports Radio.
Straight out of Vegas!
Be sure to catch live editions of Straight Outta Vegas weekdays at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
I'm RJ Bell. We're Straight Outta Vegas.
And I'm Jonas Knox, voice of You, the Fan. Coming up here in just a couple of moments, we are going to talk about somebody who has a sports betting tie, but they're also extremely wealthy after last night's performance.
And for a while, hey, each weekday, we have fun bringing the fun of Vegas straight to you. Right now in the Strip, 84 degrees, the neon is pumping.
So Jeopardy champion James Holzhauer continued to dominate, another win on Tuesday night. That's 29 straight victories. He tacks on nearly $60,000 to his earnings, putting him at a little over $2.2 million in total. RJ, he's got a sports betting tie. What does Vegas make of his performance?
And I said it in the tease. I said, we held back on this. And here's why. I didn't really see, you know, because in a weird way, you would think, see that guy up there, the best Jeopardy guy ever, perhaps we're heading towards. He does the same thing I do for a living. And, you know, a couple months ago, I was more famous than him. So that in a way looks good for for us, right? And his name's so tough. In a couple of years, who knows? What was that guy's name? But the fact of the matter is, what he's doing is amazing. It was just, does it apply to sports betting? But one thing I started seeing, because I used to watch Jeopardy, but I haven't watched much of this, is where some of his strategy with risking money really does come from sports betting. And now that he's moving into this all-time type territory, I think we should discuss it. Brad, you've got some numbers. Now, here's what I want you to do. I want you to do each of these numbers one at a time. I don't want you to like rattle them off, because I just want us to think for a second what it really means. Things like how many, you know, what percentage has he been right on and stuff like that. Because I watched Jeopardy for years. You know, I would say most people were, even the winning player was usually right 70, 75% of the time, you know, maybe 80. Does that sound about right? And these numbers just blow your mind, Brad.
So first number is what's the percent that James Holzhauer answers correctly? 97% of all the questions that James answers are correct. 97%, RJ.
I mean, that's better than 80. I know that much. I mean, I got to be honest with you. If I had, and listen, I'm very confident in some ways. But literally, if I had the answers in front of me, I would mispronounce more than 3% to the point that they would say, nope, buzz. So, I mean, seriously. And Brad, I mean, you too, let's be honest.
Oh, no question.
So to me, the idea that some of the questions he knows the answer to, he's not even getting the buzzer on, though supposedly he's got the greatest, you know, buzzer control in the history of the game. So, yes, 97% is shockingly good.
Yeah, and just to put that in perspective, if you're comparing him to Ken Jennings, he's the guy that has the record for amount of winning, 74 days, about 15 years ago. He was answering Ken Jennings 91% of the time. So James answering more correct than Ken, but here's where he starts to separate
himself.
But
hold on a second. Hold on. Now let's think about this, because if you say 97-91, it sounds kind of close. Oh, it's in the 90s. But let's go in reverse. How far from perfect versus Jennings? So it's three, you know, about 3 percentage points versus 9. Thus, Jennings is missing 3 times as many questions.
Wow. I like that, RJ.
Hey, Fez, if you don't mind, and we are straight out of Vegas with Fezzik and RJ Bell, that's me, and we're talking about the Jeopardy. It's kind of appropriate. And again, there was news today that Alex Trebek is doing better. But, you know, a guy who, you know, dedicated his life, obviously well compensated, but just loves Jeopardy, Trebek. And I was, when you're on planes, a lot of them have, you know, the ability to watch stuff. I watched a couple of game show documentaries coming back a while back, and literally Trebek's on every one. I don't care how small it is, he's there because he wants to promote Jeopardy. So it's kind of great that this I guess renaissance and attention is coming, you know, when Alex is still able to enjoy it, and let's hope he's able to for a long time to come. So Fez, what you've been talking about off air is how when you think about how much to bet on these games and the way that it's being approached here, a lot of similarities, a lot of, let's say, expertise from sports betting being applied.
Absolutely, and it really shows on the daily doubles where Jeopardy James, RJ, typically wagers upwards of 75% of his current bankroll. By contrast, most of the other Jeopardy contestants prior to him would wager very passively, like 20% of the bankroll. Huge edge for Jeopardy James. And remember, he's getting 97% right.
Hold on a second. So why... To me, whenever something is revolutionary, my first question is, why did it take so long? So if you would have played on Jeopardy, how would you? And again, listen, we're going by the honor system here. Did you watch Jeopardy all these years at various times? I'm sure you did, and say, oh, they're all betting so wrong. Now, I know you got your daily double theories, and if anyone wants to go and take a nap, you can hear about those. But other than that, would you – and by the way, Fez, let's give you credit. You don't want to pronounce that last name, and you're going, hey, it's Jeopardy James. That might be the cleverest thing you say all show. But let's be honest. Would you approach it that way?
Absolutely, RJ. Frankly, this really was obvious to me.
So hold on, I was a second. Hold on a second. The whole world missed it. And the only two people was Jeopardy James and, yes, Steve Fezzik.
I'm sure there were some other people who were aware of it. But frankly, hey, sports bettors and professional gamblers, RJ, are uniquely qualified to figure this out.
I mean, how many professional gamblers are they, right? You know, Daryl, you were asking about that in a different way.
Yeah, I wanted to know, my question to you, Fez, is how well-known is Holzhauer known around Vegas?
Well, he's not well-known by the bettors. He is known by the bookmakers.
Hold on a second, Fez. So what you're saying is, in a media sense, because when you say bettors, that's confusing. Who's bettors?
Me. Me and other people just betting.
Okay, so you're saying professional bettors, or are we talking – yeah, how's this sound? I'm going to tell you the group, and you tell me how well known you found them to be, to answer Daryl's question. Someone who might listen to Straight Out of Vegas, listen to other, you know, lesser gambling show. Oh, wait, sorry about that. Other gambling shows, and they bet, but they don't bet. You know, it's not professional. At that time, or that group, how well known would you say?
Not known at all.
Okay. Amongst the professionals, the guys that nodded each other, going in and out of various casinos, how well known was he?
Not well known at all, RJ.
Okay, so you might think, wait a minute, was this guy really a professional bettor? Now there's one last group, and the answer is strong. How about the bookmakers?
Yeah, the bookmakers know about him, and apparently he likes to focus on live wagering. He bets after the game has started oftentimes.
Okay, so that's, to me, another sign of intelligence from Jeopardy James is the fact that if you're very good at something, betting-wise, the more people know about it, the more they can emulate you, and the more chance that you get barred. They're saying, this guy's so good, everyone's talking about him. He wins a couple games against you. Now you say, we don't want your action anymore. Now, Fez had to make a decision a while back. You know, a guy that was getting kind of known off of the two super contests, but he said, hey, I can still bet and make a ton of money and also enjoy a media career. But most bettors, and Fez, before you decided on that, you know, you were ambivalent about notoriety, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. At the Stardust Invitational, I once wore a wig and a disguise when I was up on stage.
But that was a whole other thing. That's a whole other show in late June after the NBA Finals. When we come back, we're going to talk about something no less important with an expert than the future of sports media.
Be sure to catch live editions of Straight Outta Vegas weekdays at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
Straight Outta Vegas here on Fox Sports Radio. Coming up 15 minutes from now here on FSR, we're going to take an early look at Game 1 of the NBA Finals between the Warriors and the Raptors coming up tomorrow night. That 15 minutes from now. I'm Jonas Knox, voice of You, the Fan. He's the voice of Vegas, RJ Bell.
I've been looking forward to this one. Jason McIntyre, part of the Fox family. He's always been my kind of go-to media guy, founder of The Big Lead. I reached out and said, what do you think of the sale of Sports Illustrated? Anyone over the age of 35, I think, would say, wow. And he said, you know, I've got my take, but there's one guy you got to talk to. And luckily, I had followed him for years and years. It's Ryan Glassbeagle. And an easy name to pronounce, I would say. Ryan, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me.
How'd I do on that?
I appreciate it. Good. You aced the test.
All right. Now, so the rest of this segment is you, baby, is let's start with the obvious question. And then I'm going to let you guide this interview because I want you to get to the stuff that you think is the most important. And here's why it's important. It's not only because I got Sports Illustrated as a kid, many of you did. It's that literally, and maybe this is the way I'll start the question, is literally they say that if you remove the brand value, let's say you took the operation of Sports Illustrated and sold the brand Sports Illustrated and started it under, or then just slapped another name on the wall, what I read was the company would have had a negative or a minimum a zero value, meaning Sports Illustrated operationally as a business, zero, whereas the brand still has value. Is that how you took it?
You know, I don't think that it's totally zero because they do still have a lot of web distribution, and there's things that they could do to kind of strip high-priced people and maybe not lose that much traffic. Such
yeah,
that
but Ryan, if they could have done that, and it's easy for you to say, why haven't they done it all these years? I mean, anyone that listens to Richard Deitch when he was at Sports Illustrated, he was, you know, if you listen behind, you know, between the lines, he was bemoaning that, hey, doesn't seem like SI is too healthy. I mean, it seems like if it was easy, they would have done it, right?
Well, no, I certainly think that that's a fair take. There are ways they could have done it, but I think that it would have diminished their brand so much that it wouldn't have had the value that they even did extract. Now, I will agree with you that the number that they sold for people who don't know and are just hearing this for the first time, the company Meredith, which is an Iowa-based publishing company that mostly publishes magazines for Midwestern housewives, they bought Time Inc., which was Time, Fortune, Money, Sports Illustrated, and People. Basically, what they did was they sold off Time, they sold off Fortune, they stopped publishing Money in print, they sold SI, and they bought all those things basically because they thought that they could make more money from People magazine than Time Inc. was making from it. And when they did this, they thought that they were going to get $200 million or more for Sports Illustrated. And they wound up, after over a year, selling it for $110 million to a company called Authentic Brand Groups, which is a fashion conglomerate. They licensed Nautica and Juicy Couture and Prince. And then they also do marketing and licensing for like Shaq and the estate of Muhammad Ali and things like that. And they're not a media business. And so Meredith, they sold it to them for $110 million, but then they're paying them for the next 2 years at least and continuing to operate the magazine and the website themselves, basically because I don't think the brand name is really worth a lot without the magazine and the website, but the company that they're selling it to has no expertise in this industry and no apparent interest in learning that on the fly.
Wow. So think about that. On one hand, because my first thought was, well, wait a minute. If the brand doesn't have any value, why'd they pay 100, even the depressed price of 110 mil or sticks, as we like to call it on this show, like Bobby Axe does. But the fact of the matter is, what you're saying is, if you take a, let's say, OK magazine and have a generic name on it, it goes nowhere. But with Sports Illustrated, in theory, especially with the swimsuit issue, and maybe some others, there might be some money there. But here's the main takeaway, guys, is I would make the case up to 1990 or so that if something big happened, your first thought was, wow, I wonder if that's going to be on the Sports Illustrated cover. Now, listen, I know 1990 is a while back, but it's not that far back. The idea that, you know, if I, again, let's, Ryan, and we're talking to Ryan Glass-Beagle. You can follow him on Twitter at Sports Report, but it's R-A-P-P-O-R-T. Is there a better way to say that, Ryan?
Rapport, yes.
Yeah, oh, rapport, like we have a great conversation. I should have known that, right? Okay, now, to me, I guess the question is, let's make you the odds maker. Over, under, in years, and you can say 2.5 or whatever, Sports Illustrated is no longer in print.
I'm going to go over 2.5 because I...
No, I'm saying, what would your odds be? What would your odds be? Like, what number would you set?
I think, well, it depends how frequently. Once a month, once every 3 months. In some form, SI Print, I believe, will exist for at least a decade because there is still a lot of value in that cover. Like, athletes want to be on it despite what people say about the curse. Teams want their stars on that cover. When you go to an airport, if you're fiddling around and looking at the newsstand, maybe you're still a little bit intrigued about who's on that cover. So I do think newsstands in the airport or
you're right.
New York City.
You're right, because that is, it's kind of wild how there's so many magazines in the airport, and I love it. Listen, where I grew up in the late 80s and pre-internet in a small town in the Midwest. My mom was probably one of those housewives buying people. Well, and the fact of the matter is the magazines were like the lifeline out of that dreary town. And and now a young kid might say, or even not so young, a 30-year would say, yeah, but isn't the internet so much better? And let's finish a little more globally, because I would make the case, and give me a short answer on this one, that Sports Illustrated, the last 5 or 6 years, has tried more or as much as any brand to do things in a digital, on the digital platform. Whereas they had stuff that was exclusive, they had video series. It felt like it wasn't a lack of trying. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that, although I'm not sure that they invested those in like the right stories or necessarily the right storytellers. Although I would say that the MMQB that they launched with Peter King has been a huge editorial success because they still have a lot of relevant NFL coverage, even with Peter gone. And so I think that was one of the things they tried that worked.
But Ryan, let me jump in a second. It seems to me if you're a startup, right, if pregame.com is able to get, let's say, mentioned in the press a bunch, like we're lucky enough too, it has a ton of value because the question is being known or unknown to some people, right? But
right.
For Sports Illustrated, everyone knew them anyway. So if MMQB didn't help the bottom line, is more brand awareness and splitting off the brand? Was that the answer?
Well, I don't know. I guess, they did fold it back into the SI NFL coverage, but I still think that from, like, a web traffic perspective, that SI is an authority on NFL coverage. As a fan of the league, read Albert Breer's column?
I do, but I'm in the 1% that's in the industry, right? So I guess in a weird way, that's why I think, and I think you're much better at this than most, is most writer, because you have a business mind. It's obvious if you read your work. And oh, by the way, it's Jason Glassbeagle at The Big Lead, thebiglead.com. And I'll say this in closing, and quickly I'll mention about what most writers sanctify writing. They put it up like there should be lights coming from the sky. And it's like, okay, but like what sports website, I mean, Fox, and again, we can say we like it, we didn't like it. Fox said, you know, we're not going to write anything. We're just going to put videos up. And I know ESPN's not making money with her, and again, Don's a friend of mine, but with Don Van Noten and those guys, it's hard. And when I say I know, I don't know from Don. I'm saying, you know, you read what's publicly known about these really premier writers, and it's like a chance for ESPN to spend a little money, get some glamour as they grind out the billions, you know, or at least they used to with the cable company. I guess my question is, all of the, let's say, Colin having Breer on the herd, and quick answer here, please, we got a break, is other than helping Breer's brand awareness, I mean, where did the money flow from that?
I mean, it flows from web traffic and impressions and direct sponsorships. Now, you're right. A lot of money that used to go to print advertisements next to the back page of Rick Riley, which is very scarce, is now going instead to Facebook or Google or Amazon. But there is still a lot of audience demand for the written word.
Yeah, and I agree with that. It's just what's the format, and does it deserve to be sanctified, or is it like any other content, right? So, again...
Well, I think most people would rather on their phone read something than watch a video, but that we still haven't totally as an industry figured out how to turn that into money, whether that's subscription or advertising or what.
And here's my prediction. It's not really a prediction because it's happened again and again. The next greats are going to be like, you know, the big brands are going to be not the old brands repurposing themselves, but rather the young guys that grew up like the SI founders did with magazines in their blood, where the guys that grow up with Instagram in their blood, or the ones that did 5 years ago, are the ones that's going to launch the next big company. We might not even know the name of it yet.
Ryan, we got to run.
Thank you, Ryan. When we come back, we're going to preview Golden State and... oh, I think it's Toronto. We'll be back in a minute.
That's coming up next. He's RJ Bell. I'm Jonas Knox, and this is the pregame show you've always wanted on Fox Sports Radio.
Straight out of Vegas!
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
I'm RJ Bell. We're straight out of Vegas.
And I'm Jonas Knox, voice of you, the fan. We are coming up on game one of the NBA Finals right now on pregame.com. An early look sees the Toronto Raptors a one-point favorite, Brad Powers.
Yeah, and we'll have a full deep dive on tomorrow's show into game one. But I wanted to talk about favorites and how they do in the NBA playoffs. Unlike a lot of sports, the cream really rises to the crop when it comes to the NBA playoffs more than any other major sport. Overall, game-by-game basis, since we're talking 15-plus years, going back to 2003, favorites win in the NBA playoffs about 70% of the time. Favorites cover, for our purposes, 54% of the time. That's on a game-by-game basis. Win 70% of the time, cover 54% of the time. And when it gets to the series, the three biggest series in the NBA, we're talking Eastern and Western Conference Finals and NBA Finals. Eastern and Western Conference Finals, 30-plus years, series favorites. That's who's going to win the series. Favorites are 50-14. 50-14. And in the NBA Finals, going back almost 35
hey, Brad,
years.
We're going to have to pick this up
series
tomorrow.
Series favorites are 26-8.
Oh, sorry about that. Yeah, so we'll repeat that stuff tomorrow. Jonas, take it away.
Yeah, guys, and tomorrow a full look ahead at Game 1 of those NBA Finals, Warriors and the Raptors. The Odd Couple is next here on Fox Sports Radio. We are straight out of Vegas. We'll be back tomorrow, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific, right here on Fox Sports Radio, and as always, on the iHeartRadio app.
Straight out of Vegas!
Be sure to catch live editions of Straight Outta Vegas weekdays at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.